All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Tuesday, March 27th. I'm Doug Norrie.
James.
And we are sitting next to each other doing a full Davis Norrie stack in the house right now. We have the Davis family visiting, so we're doing a podcast live in the same room. But that also means we have a bunch of kids running around the house and wives talking loudly. So if you hear that stuff in the background, that is going to be very hard for us to control for environment today. So
just X them out.
Yeah,
X out that part of the stack. You're going to stack them all. You probably don't want those as part of the podcast.
We're going to do the NBA podcast here together, talk an 8-game slate of Tuesday basketball. Ooh. Try to wade our way through the schedule as it gets increasingly more difficult to figure out what teams are doing here down the stretch. We've seen this kind of day in and day out. Most teams' fates are set at this point, and we've talked about this at length on the podcast before about, you know, where certain teams kind of stand. At this point, there's probably only 6 or 7 teams total with anything to play for. We'll go through some of the injury news and notes as even teams like the Houston Rockets begin their rest schedule as they get ready for the playoffs.
A rest schedule?
Yeah, the rest.
We're all getting arrested.
No. And so we'll go through those games. A couple leverage games here on the schedule, but not that many as we dive in. Reminder, too, before we get started, we'll be having our first baseball podcast of the season. We'll go up tomorrow morning sometime on our baseball feed. So go search for that DFSR MLB podcast. That will go up, and I'll put a link for that in the NBA podcast as well. And then possibly even post it on this feed. So if you can get a listen to that if you're into baseball, with baseball starting Thursday coming down the pike. So we'll begin a pretty intensive podcast schedule from here on out where we're doing 6 total a week, 3 basketball, 3 baseball. Basketball today, though, buddy, coming off an evening where the lineups looked pretty good, had a nice GPP finish in the 20 entry max DK GPP, came in second there. So all things considered, pretty nice night. It's always nice at this point when you have the Lakers playing. Those are the best slates at this point, because that's really the most predictive team probably in all of basketball, but they don't go today. First game on the schedule, Spurs play the Wizards. The playoff implications for this game are there in that the Spurs are probably going to make the playoffs in the West. They're 3 games up on the 9th seed, the Nuggets. And then we have the Wizards, who are jockeying for position. And I always wonder, I wonder your opinion about how much you think, I think we've talked about this before, but I can't remember if we talked about it off the air. How much do you think teams are, like the Wizards right now, are playing to play a certain team in the first round right now? If they were to finish now, the Wiz would play the Sixers, which doesn't seem like a matchup where you probably, I take that back. The Wizards would play the Cavs. They keep winning, they're going to either play the Cavs or they would play the Sixers. So they'd be the 4-5 game. Do you think that factors into where they want to, is there a situation where they might just would rather play the Celtics? If they were to keep losing, they could lose their way into the, I'm being kind of serious. The Celtics are significantly, you would think that teams would much rather, especially if Irving's hurt, would much rather play the Celtics now than those other two teams.
Than the Blazing Cavs.
Right. LeBron. Exactly. Do you think that factors into decisions here? Do you think, I don't really want to go too crazy about, thinking about it here, but give me your thoughts on this game and whether or not you think this is a game where both teams are motivated to play their starters significant minutes.
Well, we know the Wizards have been playing their starters significant minutes, so it looks at the very least like they're not going to lose on purpose. So, with Beal playing 39 minutes in each of the last 2 contests, they're certainly not tanking trying to play the Celtics, I wouldn't think. So I think that there's probably not too much to read into it for the Wizards other than the fact that they're not ready to call it quits just yet. Even though their seeding is actually relatively locked. They could go down. It's going to be really hard for them to move up, though, with both the Pacers and whoever that other team was that you said for 3
the
games.
The Cavs.
Yeah, the Cavs, I'm sorry. 3 games ahead of them right now. So, yeah, relatively secure, but probably just going to keep playing their hardest.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is this game has the lowest over-under of the day, kind of by a lot, only 202, where most other games are falling in that, 210 or higher range.
Yeah, a lot of high-scoring ones today, too, several over 220.
I'm just not sure we see, both of these teams are pretty good at defense, Spurs especially. Wizards are pretty good on defense, too. So I'm not sure we get a ton of crazy value from this game. I'm not really sure this is where we want to be, even if we thought that we were going to get all the predictive starters minutes out of the Wizards. I don't think we're going to get there. And then on the Spurs side, they're still playing these rotations. Gasol sometimes comes in, plays a lot off the bench. Kyle Anderson sometimes sees 30 minutes, sometimes not, depending on how he's playing. So I'm just not sure this is the game where we really want to land. Denver goes in and plays Toronto. Toronto is a 9-point favorite. There's no sign that they're going to rest anybody for this game, even though their playoff seeding is all but locked. They're 3 games up on the Celtics, so maybe they're still thinking there's a chance the Celtics could catch them. The Celtics have actually won 4 in a row, which is pretty amazing considering they're playing without Kyrie. But so maybe the Raptors are looking at this and saying, we just need to win. We probably need to win at least one or two more games. I'm not sure what their magic number is, but they're 9-point favorites here against a Denver team that has really pretty much just pissed away their playoff chances down the stretch with some bad losses. I mean, they lost to the Sixers last night. That's not a bad loss. The Sixers are a pretty good team, but they've had some really terrible losses in the schedule, and they now sit, they sit a game out of in the loss column to the Timberwolves, but I believe they do not own the tiebreaker there, so they would need to, they would need to vault over Minnesota. What do we want to do here with the Toronto guys? Do we see the 9-point spread as something like getting toward the blowout zone? Do we want to consider guys like Lowry or DeRozan for any kind of minutes in a game that I think they're probably motivated to win, but they probably don't want to go too crazy?
Yeah, it's the same thing as I said with Washington. If you look at the last two games, I think you get a much clearer picture of what Toronto's hoping to do. Prior to that, I was actually pretty concerned on this podcast and elsewhere, seeing 27 minutes out of Lowry, 28 minutes out of DeRozan, that kind of thing. In the last two games, Lowry's played 37 minutes in each of them, and given that he'd suffered from the most recent, you know, being bout of being a little bit dinged up, I think that the Raptors plan to play their guys more reliable minutes. The real question with the Raptors is, what do reliable minutes look like outside of Lowry and DeRozan? I think you can probably count on those guys to play their minutes in a pretty fast matchup here. But outside of that, like, power forward comes and goes, based seemingly arbitrarily. Valanciunas is anybody's guess. Like, some games 27 minutes, some games 35. And the small forward position is the same way. So I think that even though they are probably playing their best, I think outside of Lowry in particular, I don't see a lot of value I'd be especially excited about here.
The only guy that I can probably possibly talk myself into here is Ibaka, and that's only because power forward, and you're either going to get this because I'm going to mention it a couple times, or you're going to get it because we just don't mention any of the guys that are available, so one right. or the other. But power forward on FanDuel is as bad as you'll ever see it on a single slate. I know sometimes we can get into hyperbole with stuff like that.
Here we are again.
this one's for real. I mean, the starting power forward list is really, the fact that you have to roster two of these guys today is going to be a real, real problem at the price points. Ibaka has played 30 minutes in each of the last two games, has been just kind of fine. This is a good matchup, though, in terms of overall defense, though Millsap is a better defender than some of the DVP stats are going to show for Denver over the course of the year. Like, they have improved their defense with him back. Though they're still not anything close to a lockdown defense. Denver side, they did a bad matchup with Toronto, but we still are seeing, they're still without Gary Harris. They still have they've shortened their rotations enough that we're still getting a lot of Will Barton, still getting Jokic here. They're underdogs, and they've also been able to pull off some tough wins at times during the season. Do we want to go overboard with some of their minutes as a team that we think are safe? Because this is going to be one of our questions we have on a night-to-night basis going forward, is are these the safer minutes, and are we willing to take some maybe negative expectation or worse expectation on the defensive matchup just to know that we're going to get like 40 minutes out of Wilson Chandler if the game stays close?
Yeah, I think that's fine. Chandler's still relatively low priced. I do think the matchup means less than the minute security, generally speaking, this late in the season. I think outside of Chandler, it might wind up being a little bit tough. Like, you know, even Will Barton's been a guy who a lot of people have been running out there. The minutes have sort of been there, but the performance has been pretty up and down. And I'm not sure that you want to stretch yourself. I mean, he's down to 7,100, so he was a little bit more expensive the last time around when he was actually surprisingly underowned in his big game against Washington. But yeah, I still think when it comes to Denver, like, you know, maybe you could think about Jokic in a pretty decent matchup against Valanciunas. Millsap's too expensive for me. Chandler reasonable, Barton reasonable, and I'm probably out on Murray. I think that's a good overall summary. But again, this early on in the cash game discussion, I'm still kind of hoping for better.
Yeah, and I think we're going to be out on some cheap. It's going to be very tough to find some cheap plays today, though. The day has a way of kind of opening things up. But yeah, we're getting down to it where we have a pretty good idea of what most teams' plans are, at least even when the ones that are iffier than others. Still, I think we're going to be struggling to find some cheaper value. And when that's the case, it's going to be hard grabbing guys at higher price points like you have with Denver because they've been playing shorter rotations in the short term. One game that actually is going to probably matter here, and the line suggests it, is Portland goes in and plays New Orleans. It's a 1.5-point favorite on New Orleans with a 222 over-under. The news and notes we have on this game are Nikola Mirotic is questionable, and as is Rajon Rondo. That is going to make that Mirotic sat out last game. Maybe Rondo sat out last game as well, and with Liggins getting the start. It was kind of unclear about who the opportunity goes for you can look at Cheick Diallo and say he played 26 minutes, but as you mentioned off the pod, like those were 26, basically like 20 minutes of garbage time. Like that game was a blot. So I don't think we can just slot him in for 20, which sucks because he's actually a pretty good points per minute guy. But this game, though, this game does mean something for playoff seeding. Blazers right now are third in the West, with the Pelicans fifth in the West. So we're still fighting it out for home court advantage, at least in the first round. Guys like Davis, Drew Holiday, let's assume Mirotić and Rondo both sit, right? Let's look at the Pelicans first. It looks like those are the two guys that are getting, that are just kind of have all the opportunity, maybe an Ian Clark in there. But it's not a great matchup against Portland. They're very, very good on defense this season. What do you think about the Pelican side?
Yeah, I'm not enamored with the Pelican side at all. I think already you're struggling to know what their plan is at the point guard position, even when Rondo does play. I think Drew Holiday is just kind of perpetually overpriced right now, based on, I think, just an increase in price. A hype-based increase in price when Boogie went out that's never really come back down. I think Davis, likewise, super expensive. Tough matchup against Portland, like you mentioned. I think you do see some minute security here. I think, like, for some of these teams, especially the ones fighting out right now, they're basically only fighting for seeding mathematically. I still think in those teams' offices, like the teams like the Pelicans are like, listen, we're three games up on a playoff spot. We're not going to be the team that just throws it away by resting guys for five extra minutes a night. So I think at least for the next like three, four games, you're going to see most of these teams in the middle of the pack continue to play their minutes. Washington falls into that boat as well. So I'm not too worried that we get the minutes here. It's just a question of whether the matchup backs it up, and I'm not sure it does.
Yeah, I think I end up feeling you on that one with the Pelican side. And again, Portland's also just a good defensive team too. So it's not like they're getting, it's not like you're getting them in some crazy fast, high-paced, bad defense matchup. Portland actually has one of the better defenses. One guy I did write up for the point guard position, who our system does really like, is Damian Lillard. Lillard over the month of March, which is, I get is an arbitrary sort of timeline, but
it suits your narrative, so go
right. You got it. It's always easier to write stuff up when it fits the thing that I want it to be anyway. Massage the numbers as any way you see fit. But he's averaged 28 points, 6 assists, and 4 rebounds in the month of March. And been putting up actually more shots, it looks like, per minute. I take that back. Right around the same amount of usage that he's had for the course of the season. But mostly here, I had him on just a great matchup. Like, the Pelicans have been brutalized by opposing point guards this season, which is what you're going to get when you guys like Ian Clark and Rondo. Holiday's a good defender, but when you have a guy like Rondo running around out there and then being spelled by now Ian Clark, be early in the season with Jameer Nelson or whatever, you're going to have point guards have their way with you. But it feels a little weird on a slate like this to pay up for a guy like Lillard, because he still strikes me as so scoring dependent. What are your thoughts? Could you see rostering him in cash? Because right now he's coming in into a decent amount, at least FanDuel lineups.
I actually really like him for cash tonight. We're getting a little bit of a discount on the price here. And I wonder if some of the adjustments the site makes are just based on some guy sitting there being like, oh, the Nets, let's bump up prices 5%. Because the Pelicans are just a hair below the Nets in terms of matchups for opposing point guards this season. And they're well ahead of the Cavs. So they are the second best matchup in the league for opposing point guards by a fairly significant margin. And Lillard has been solid. You know, like, sure, he's scoring dependent, but it doesn't matter if you're scoring dependent if you have a run like he's had of 20-plus point games, right? So I think that I'm fine with Lillard for cash. Yeah, he's not like the ideal type of payoff that you fantasize about, but I actually do think there's significant upside here, more so than maybe even his game log suggests. And since his game log suggests a pretty high floor, I think we can dream on the ceiling a little bit.
Yeah, just looking up what his like overall, and this is a number I'm going to point to later when we talk about some other guys, but in terms of guys who use scoring to as a certain percentage of their overall fantasy production, he actually falls into like, he's 64%, which is right. The guys all around him are your typical shooting guards. Guys that profile as strict number twos in the lineup, right? He falls into that same group of like Bradley Beal and Tim Hardaway Jr. and DeMar DeRozan, these guys that are, again, like traditional twos. So while I think I'm still fine with it, you are going to need him to score. And McCollum is kind of the same way. McCollum, right now, if you run FanDuel lineups for us, you're actually getting a Lillard-McCollum stack. Could you see doing something like that, knowing how just poorly the Pelicans defend against guards?
Yeah, McCollum's been excellent recently on this price point. And he's a guy who actually has been performing well where the price hasn't totally followed him up there. One bad game against Houston, but outside of that, you're basically looking at 5x points per dollar for a pretty decent stretch, basically through that month of March, and including 2 6x plus games in very tough matchups against Boston and OKC. For whatever reason, the Portland Trailblazers are kind of turning it on right now, and I'm in. You know, I think this is kind of what we've been waiting for these big guys to kind of keep the usage but increase the performance. And it seems like they're really synergizing, and I think they're totally fine cash game plays.
Yeah, they went on an insane like something like 12 or 13 game win streak, then lost two, and then beat the Thunder the other night. Really, they were sitting this high, you know, a month ago, and now all of a sudden they're sitting at third in the West. Another game that's going to be pretty heavy on our radar here, 8 o'clock game. Cleveland goes in and plays Miami. Cleveland actually 4-point road favorites in this matchup. The playoff implications aren't as stark for this one, as I think we're getting both of these teams not completely set in where they're going to land for the Eastern Conference playoffs, but close. Right now, Cleveland is in the third seed with a game up on the Sixers, who have been playing really, really well of late. And only a game and a half up on the Pacers. So there's some chance. There's still a chance for them to lose home court seeding. And then we have the Heat, who are sitting eighth in the East. There's no way the Pistons are going to catch them. And now they're really kind of just jockeying for whether they're going to play the Raptors or the Celtics. So I would say both teams have motivation. If I was the Heat, I would not want to play the Raptors. So continuing to win here and maybe vaulting over the Bucks matters. And really the guy to talk about here is LeBron. LeBron's numbers over the last, I don't know, month and a half, 2 months, he's basically averaging a triple-double. He's been, this might be his best season. Like, statistically.
Yeah, 57% shooting in that time. Like, it's really hard to score 33 points a game on 57% shooting. That's not something that a lot of people are capable of.
Yeah, he's been shooting awesome from three. And if anything, he's actually been bad from the line. He's like only like 65% from the line for as much as he gets to the free throw line. You could say he's maybe even running a little bad in scoring. He's never been a phenomenal free throw shooter, so you can't like expect 80-85% or anything like that. But he's been getting to the line and just not shooting all that well. But is he just a must? At this point, with the way he's playing, the way their team construction, how much he's had the ball and how much he's facilitating everything, do we see him as the highest owned play overall? I mean, it seems like definitely among the big money guys, but do we just see LeBron as the highest owned player overall on the slate?
I don't think he'll be the highest owned player overall on the slate. I think he's going to have really good ownership here. Miami's no slouch of a defensive matchup against the small forward position, and there actually are a team that has a few different guys that can kind of flex onto LeBron and at least pose a credible threat defensively, like James Johnson or Justice Winslow. They actually do have guys that are kind of fast enough and kind of strong enough, understanding that nobody really qualifies in both of those areas to defend LeBron properly, besides like Kawhi Leonard. I think LeBron is a good play tonight. He'll be a very high owned play. I don't think he'll be as high owned as you do. I think, you know, we've seen people be willing to flex away from LeBron. Like he was only 21% owned against Phoenix, for instance. So like how much of a must can he be against in a much slower matchup with Miami if he was only a 20% play against Phoenix? But I still think, a very solid big money payoff. And the pace of the matchup probably matters a little bit less for him just because he contributes across every single category.
Yeah, you're right about Miami just never having been a good matchup for him, just because this is what they've constructed their team with wings, like just longer guys that can just kind of flex into those positions. And we've seen Spoelstra, as much as any coach in the league, take advantage of the matchups when he gets it. Other than him, it's a little hard to see. You mentioned Miami not being a great matchup. I agree with that. It's hard to see a lot of other Cavs value there. The news we're waiting on here, Korver is still out with the death of his brother, so I'm not sure if he's going to be coming back anytime soon. He's doubtful, and I doubt he's going to be back today, and he might not be back for a little bit longer. And then we have Jeff Green, who's still doubtful with an illness. Those minutes didn't really translate. Rodney Hood played a lot off the bench. You're not going to be able to really trust that. Kevin Love has been working his way into more minutes, and I'm wondering if, you know, on a bad day at power forward, where I've already mentioned that the pickings are really slim, Love's minutes have gone 25, 30, 30, 33, and you have to think that with the way the Cavs are made up right now, that the plan is just to play him, and he's been pretty good. 20 and 15 last game, 20 and 6 the game before, 23 and 12 the game before that. Because the position is so thin, could you see us maybe jamming a guy like Love with the idea that he might just be the best talent outside of Anthony Davis, right? Like maybe just best fantasy talent that we're going to get in his price tier. And maybe that's just kind of the way to go. Maybe go a little overboard on at least where our projection sits with him.
Yeah, I don't mind Love here. 8,100 is kind of a tall order for me, but I do think the minutes are heading in the right direction. It's especially noteworthy on those minutes. If you look at a lot of the other Cavs guys, their minutes have been kind of bouncing up and down because you've had some pretty crazy game scripts in that time. Like the fact that he got 29 minutes in a blowout, in a really significant blowout of Phoenix, and then still managed to tick that up to 32 against Brooklyn leads me to believe that the true number of minutes for him is something like 32 to 33 minutes. That being said, you know, 8,100, it is a tall order. Like I mentioned before, Miami has guys that can stick on Love and kind of present him with some problems. One thing I'm going to really like for Love here probably is the rebounding. Miami, without Whiteside again, is going to have a difficult time rebounding Love. And so I think for that reason, he's looking like a pretty solid play. I'll also throw out George Hill. I think George Hill, kind of an underrated fantasy commodity right now. In close games, he's playing 35-plus minute rotations. So he's another guy I would look at here.
Yeah, you're right. They've stuck with him as that. I mean, they moved LeBron is essentially the point guard, so let's keep that. Let's be real with that. But right. Yeah, 37 and 35 minutes in two of the last three games, and is getting there, is more than getting there on this 4,900 FanDuel price. On the Miami side, I think we've finally seen a price increase across the board enough on these guys that the minutes are still so uncertain that Miami's been this constant Russian roulette of trying to figure out like who is going to be the guy on a given night, and it's been nearly impossible. And we've mentioned this. I know I've mentioned it just about every single time we've had them on the podcast, or as like a game when the podcast is rolling. But Cleveland's a great matchup. They're still really, really bad at defense. But I mean, are we just seeing the James Johnsons and Kelly Olynyks of the world too expensive for the idea that this could be the night they play 24 minutes? Like,
yeah.
Do you understand? Does that make sense what I'm saying? I think up until this point, it's been a question, because when they're like 5,000 or 5,500, if you give them 29 minutes, then all of them start to look like values. Now when they're up over mid sixes, are we willing to just kind of forget about this team because it's just too uncertain?
Yeah, I think, well, with Johnson and Olynyk specifically, they're just great big tournament plays. Johnson, his minutes have fluctuated with an 11-minute spread in the last three games, and Olynyk's have fluctuated with a 13-minute spread in the last three games. So nobody in the world besides, I guess, Eric Spoelstra can predict who's actually going to play the minutes on any given game. And I think for that reason, you're just left in the land of speculation. I will say, with the specific offensive threats that Cleveland presents, I guess James Johnson will be the best GPP target here. I do think it could be one of those games where he plays 36-plus minutes. I wouldn't bet my cash game lineups on it, though.
Moving into the last 8 o'clock game, we have Chicago goes in and plays Houston. The big news, obviously, for this game is last night, James Harden and Clint Capella were ruled out for rest, which is a clear sign that Houston is now, I mean, they kind of did it with Chris Paul too, but now a sign that Houston is now fully in getting prepared for the playoffs mode. Now,
right.
So we're stuck in a weird spot here, because with Harden and Capella, more Harden, but with Harden and Capella off the court, we see, at least for our system, about as high across the board usage, rebounding, and assist bump that you'll ever see on one player that goes to Chris Paul, right? So right now, we get, if you put in a query, an on-off query for Harden specifically off the court, you get a 9% bump on Paul's usage, a 10% bump on his rebounds, and a 10% bump on his assists. Like, that's... You just someone that stares at our system more than anybody, you never see this kind of across the board bump. I only have him for 32 minutes. I think even at 30 minutes, he might be a play here. What are your thoughts on Paul, and how worried would you be in a blowout against the Bulls that they just start resting him as well?
Yeah, I think he's still listed as a game time decision right now, so I wouldn't just fire him in there unless I had specific news that he was going to play. I think that you're right.
Well, I'm going to say that I think he play. I think the idea that they're resting Harden means that they think he's going to play. Is that like
could be?
Let's say he plays. Let's say he's assuming
he plays and he'll be out there. I think you don't want to give him more than like 31 minutes, and I think he could still be a play for sure. I think he or Eric Gordon, they're my candidates for the highest owned player on the slate. Eric Gordon, I think, is a phenomenal play. He's 5,600 right now. He was seeing, obviously, a big bump with Chris Paul off the court, and Harden going off the court seems to benefit him just as much, I would imagine. And in the last three games, he paid 6x points per dollar on this price going away. So I think Harden going away is probably a more significant loss for them than Chris Paul even. So I think Eric Gordon, if you get that Harden news, he also is like less valuable of a commodity to them too. So I think he rates to play his full run of minutes more likely than Chris Paul, who just missed three games with a bad hammy. So
yeah, and by the way, for Gordon's usage percentage bumps in our system, 6% usage, 6% rebounding, just about 10% assists, with the idea that most of that's scoring. He's very, very scoring dependent. I think he's the highest. I think, you know, when I was talking about percentages of scoring based on overall scoring, he is basically the highest in the league at 73%. Like, his, all of his production
18
comes,
points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists per game.
Yeah, like, only only Troy Daniels, but I said about he had to have over more than 700 fantasy points, sort of an arbitrary number, but only Troy Daniels for the Suns ranks with a higher percentage of his overall fantasy production coming from actual scoring. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think stacking those two guards in this game, and 8,000 for Paul seems completely reasonable, even at 30 minutes with this matchup. And then we'll kind of wait to hear. Last time Capella sat, Tarik Black got the start. We'll see, you know, maybe a few more minutes at an NA. I'm only mentioning these guys because it could matter for some of these power forward position considerations to see what the Rockets end up doing. On the Bulls side, the news and notes for this one is Zach LaVine still out, Chris Dunn still out, Lauri Markkanen questionable, and Denzel Valentin is doubtful. I'm not sure how much it matters. Markkanen coming back really crushes it because I think you can make a case for a guy like Vonleh.
At a bad power forward position, I think Vonleh is sort of the answer. I mean, he's going to
play. Vonleh might be the answer even if Markkanen comes back. Like, this is how bad if he's going to play like 25 minutes, this is how bad the position is. I kind of cut you off there. But what are your thoughts here? Like, where do we stand with wanting to possibly roll out the Bulls that maybe Cameron Payne too? It seems like there should be opportunity here, but again, this team's fully in the tank. Oh, by the way, Zipser's out as well.
Well, you know me, Doug. I'm an optimist, right? So I'm going to assume that Markkanen's not going to play for the sake of this. Yeah, you're fist pumping. We got there. Just because Vonleh really does make the lineup so much cleaner. I don't want to play him as a backup. I think maybe unlike you, but compared to some of the other names that are lurking about right now, he looks a lot more attractive than most of those guys. And I think I might even be able to consider Cameron Payne here too. Yeah, Chicago's a pretty heavy underdog right now at a 12.5-point spread. But it's really hard to play Payne on this team with Dunn out less than like 27, 28 minutes. Like, almost regardless. Like, to play him that through the third quarter isn't outrageous at all. And the price is just there. You know, he's scores, you know, 4.5, 5x on this price, even at 24 minutes. I think if he can flex up to 30 plus if Harden misses, or if Chris Paul's on something like a minutes limit, I think he could be a nice cash game option as well. So, I'm interested in Payne. I'm interested in Vonleh. Outside of that, I think we might be a little bit too deep in the realm of speculation for me. But, yeah, I think I could see myself playing those guys in cash.
10 o'clock games, Dallas goes in and plays Sacramento, which is like the turtle versus the turtle.
Dude, I can't wait for this game tonight.
this one's brutal. This is the two of the four slowest teams in basketball, both trying to lose. There's are some injury news and notes. Not really sure how much it matters. Dirk is probable to play. Barea has already been ruled out, so I guess there's going to be some guards minutes, but I don't want to be in the business of delving dealing those out in any reliable fashion to the rest of these guys. And then they have some other guys questionable. Dwight Powell questionable. Nerlens Noel questionable. Zach Randolph on the other side. This game, the only guy that I could see, I did write up Harrison Barnes, only because Barnes seems like the one Mav who's, even in the tanking, has still been playing. He's played 36, 33, and 34 minutes in the last three and put up 20 shots, 18 shots, and 19 shots. That's a decent amount of usage. He's another guy that needs to score. Scott Labissiere's kind of showing up near the power forward with Zach Randall. I don't know.
That's exciting.
Yeah, this is what I mean. This game is brutal. It's really slow. And there might be a guy or two we play here, but I don't know if you're seeing something I'm not.
No, I think that, unfortunately, it's probably a little bit not quite right. Barea being out again, like, it's unfortunate because actually all the normally good Mavs plays are out. Like, but those are the guys that fill in for the starters when they're gone. So, like, Barea, Powell, these are really some of the highest owned guys, like, historically for DFSR that we've round up playing. And then some of the other guys that actually play and are good, like Dennis Smith Jr., are just too expensive. I'm not going to run a guy for 7,700 with some of the other options we have at point guard tonight. So, yeah, unfortunately, like, I was kind of hoping Yogi Ferrell would get more run because he's actually been very good on a points per dollar basis recently. The price is pretty reasonable for him. But if he's not starting, you're not going to count on that kind of production off the bench. So, nah, I'm not going to go too deep on Dallas here.
Yeah, I think, and again, please do not turn around and watch this game. If anything, just go.
Yeah, we'll try to plan bedtime around that for tonight with the kids.
Spend time with your family. 10:30 game. Indiana goes in and plays Golden State. We'll start with the Golden State side. They are still dealing with significant injuries. They've had a great injury run, pretty much a great injury run, at least through the playoffs the last couple of years. That might be coming to a head as it's already been ruled out that Curry's going to miss the first round of the playoffs. They're still without Durant and still without Klay. Draymond looks like he's going to come back and play. They're a home underdog to the Pacers, 7-point home underdog to the Pacers right now. I want to start on this side because guys like Quinn Cook and Nick Young have still been playing pretty significant minutes. And I'm just wondering if Cook... I actually still think Cook is maybe just still underpriced for how much he's playing and shooting and kind of just getting the opportunity for him. The system is going to always struggle with guys like this because the team is completely different. And so,
yeah, like how are you supposed to adjust usage? You're like, I'd like to see all Quinn Cook's minutes without Durant, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and right. Steph Curry this season.
And it's just like not realistic to put, the sample size is too small. And yet we have a guy who's putting up double-digit shots per game. We've seen him touch up near 40 minutes at times. This is his fantasy output for the last five games. 39 points, 34 points, 30 points, 43 points, 42 points.
That's pretty good.
He's 6,000 on FanDuel. Is there a chance? Now, our points per dollar for him is still is relatively low, but is there a chance that we're just not fully grasping what Quinn Cook is in this offense now? Because it's going to be always hard to massage these numbers in a way that is fitting what the reality of what's happening.
Yeah, I think you can pretty safely just look at his fantasy points per minute since he's been in this specific starting role, which we actually blessedly do have a 5-game sample size for. And he's been good. I mean, he's averaging significantly better than 5x points per dollar on these prices. You get a really good matchup against Atlanta here. I think Quinn Cook, you know, you're talking about guys who are going to have really high ownership tonight. Put him in that category too, because, yeah, 6,000 is a lot for him if you go back to what he was doing earlier this season. But confidence really matters for point guards as well, specifically these backup types because so much of a point guard's value comes from how much they have the ball in their hands, both for distributing and for scoring. So, yeah, I really like Quinn Cook here. I think he's an excellent cash game option. I think Golden State will manage to keep this game close, even with playing all backups. So, yeah, great cash game play.
And what about Draymond? Like, I mean, because he's actually the one piece that does matter for the playoffs, right? Like, the rest of these guys are... I don't think Cook at this point, I don't think would even be on the playoff roster once they got everyone back. So like I don't think he'd actually make the roster, which is kind of a shame considering how he's played. But we know, and Nick Young is going to be assuming everyone's healthy, he's going to be a 5 to 10 minute guy in the playoffs. Maybe not even that. He might not play at all. But Draymond is a guy that does matter, and he's also a guy that sees crazy usage and across the board bumps when he's without all the rest of these guys. So where do we stand with him in his minutes? Because he's coming back from a game where he just sat, and he's 8,500, and at a power forward position that we've mentioned is bad. Is he like, we've talked about maybe paying up for Love. Do we just end up going kind of overboard on Draymond and hoping he gets there maybe in only 32 minutes?
Yeah, Draymond's been sitting for illness. So I think that if he were to play, it would be kind of the binary. Like he's either going to play his full run of minutes or he's not. So if he's back tonight, I think you can trust him a lot more at 8,500 than you can Love at 8,100. Just because I think he's a better fantasy player overall. And I think the minutes are probably more secure. And furthermore, the role is totally different. Again, with no Curry, no Thompson, no Durant. He was already kind of a centerpiece of that offense where they were running a lot of sets through him. That can only go up with Quinn Cook running the point instead. So, yeah, I think Green, another really, really good cash game. Especially, again, thin position. You can play him in power forward all day.
The two games where before he started sitting, he had 50 fantasy points in each of those games.
Yeah, easy.
And the Pacers are a good match. The Pacers are they're slow. They play very slow over the second half of the season, but they don't really have much in the way of front court defense. Pacers side, though, they're expected to put up points here. I take that back. This over-under is pretty low, 205. But 7-point favorite against a team that we're also going to have trouble evaluating from a defensive standpoint because, again, we're getting more of a sample size now because they played a couple weeks now without most of their guys. And yet, it's still going to be very difficult to kind of test where they are in terms of overall defense. But guys like Oladipo, his price has come down a little bit. He's 8,500 on FanDuel, somewhere in that same range on DraftKings, 8,300 on DraftKings. Are we getting any value on them knowing that the Warriors are just a worse defensive team?
Yeah, the Warriors are a worse defensive team for sure. I think you can also count on them playing a little bit of a slower pace because they don't have guys like Curry, Thompson, kind of both running the court fast, and Durant as well, actually, and shooting early in possessions. Like Curry, especially, one of the reasons Golden State's pace winds up becoming so high is because Curry is so willing to shoot in the first 5 seconds of a possession, particularly in transition. So I think if you take those guys off, you are seeing a slight reduction in possessions. And that being said, like, you can still play guys on Indiana. It's not like Golden State becomes a bad matchup with those guys off the court. So yeah, Oladipo, I think he's playable. I never feel really excited to have him out there for my cash games at these kind of prices. He just hasn't been paying them reliably, even though his fantasy points per minute, or fantasy points rather per game on the season, have supported this price in a positive matchup. You know, guys like Collison, you'll also see consideration on. The big man minutes have been kind of all over the place, but yeah, Indiana, just, I don't know, I can't think of the last time I was super excited to see a Pacer in my cash game lineup.
Yep, same. Maybe Thaddeus Young, if you think he's going to play a lot of minutes, mostly because we just talked about power forward being such a problem. Final game on the slate, Milwaukee goes in and plays the Clippers. Playoff implications in this one, Clippers likely on the outside looking in. They would need to leapfrog over Denver and another team in the West to make the playoffs. I don't think that's going to happen. They're probably on the outside looking in. And then we have Milwaukee, who is fighting for playoff seeding. Right now, they're seventh in the East. My guess is they would probably like to stay there, like I said, against the Celtics, but who knows about what the motivations are. They almost no chance that they can get up into a home court advantage. So it looks like they're pretty much set. But this game's rated to be one of the high, I think it is the second highest over under of the night after the Denver-Toronto game, but this one has a much thinner spread, so you can see the points at least look like they're going to come in a little more evenly, with the Clippers a -3 favorite. Let's start with Milwaukee. They have Giannis back. They randomly just did not play Jabari Parker that many minutes last game, 18 minutes.
So yeah, it's driving me crazy.
Yeah, it's a little difficult to figure out what is going on there. No other real news and notes for them, except that, like, the random things that are just, like, Malcolm Brogdon's still out, whatever. Not a bad matchup here against the Clippers for a guy like Giannis, but it's hard to imagine they go crazy extending the minutes on any one of these guys.
Yeah, I think Giannis, he's an interesting idea for tonight at the big money payoff spot. At 11-2 on FanDuel, that's kind of competitive for him on his season numbers. You like that he paid 37 minutes against San Antonio, but he really hasn't paid this price reliably. And, you know, again, understand that he'll get 3-game stretches where he's excellent, but then 2-game stretches where he gives you 30 fantasy points a game. Totally playable here against the Clippers. The Clippers don't really defend the 3 very well. They haven't since we started this business. To that end, we did see Wesley Johnson play extended minutes the last time these two teams met, so maybe you can target him in big tournaments. He played 27 minutes and scored 21 fantasy points. I think we could see, like, the Clippers have shown that that's the plan with Wesley Johnson, just to play him against basically like LeBron and Giannis. So you could see him again tonight. Yeah, unfortunately, the Jabari thing is a real shame, because he could be such an answer power forward tonight, but you just can't trust it. So outside of him, Bledsoe and Middleton probably slightly too expensive, and then you're left with the give or take Giannis, you know.
And we've seen Lou Williams get his minutes back to the six-man role, but minutes creep back up to that 35-36 range. He's been really good over the last couple games, 26 points last game on 24 shots, so he was chucking from the rafters in a game that they beat Toronto on. He's coming in something near a value at shooting guard. He's always going to kind of be around that spot for us whenever you put him sub 8,000 around 35 or 36 minutes. Could you see him chucking up a lot of shots again in this matchup?
Yeah, for sure. We've seen that he's just most comfortable running with the second unit, and when he's out there, he just thinks he's the best player on the court, and that translates into fantasy production. I mean, he's producing like he was when he was priced at 8,000, except now he's 7,500. Definitely a cash game consideration tonight.
And the final guy that I want to take a look at here is DeAndre Jordan. The Milwaukee has nothing in the way of defensive center. John Henson is not the answer there. So if you want to target a game where, one, DeAndre is not going to be pulled far from the basket, which is not going to happen with John Henson, and where he's going to completely outsize the guy, this is a game where if we're looking for 15-plus rebounds, I do think this is that's in the cards here for Jordan in a game. As long as he can see the minutes, it's really been the minutes problem over the last couple games, only 32 minutes. But if you go back to actually, just translate it real quick. They played these guys 3 games ago, and he went for 25 points and 22 rebounds against this very team. So if you think 36, 37 minutes again is going to happen, the 20-20, I guess, is within range because he just did it 3 games ago. Sure. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/NBA. We'll get you that free 3-day trial, so go check that out. We'll be back again tomorrow live on the podcast from the Casa del Nori, which I think we were able to avoid the kids screaming in the background today pretty well.
Yeah,
so,
unlikely.
Yeah, it ran really, really hot there. Can't imagine it goes for another day. DFSR.com/NBA. Go check that out. Free for 3 days, and then just $34.95 a month. Buddy, talk to you again in 1 second, but talk to you on the podcast tomorrow.
Later, dude.